It's time now for World Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's broadcast number 512, and it's September 27th, 1981. I received some requests to answer certain questions on the air about the PLO, the IRA, and John Lennon's assassination. I will put those off till next week or the week after. There are a lot of requests I get in letter form that are easy to answer, but these require a longer explanation, and I think I'll put those off until next week because there's so much material this week. This is the end of September, and in two more months, it will be the 18th anniversary since John Kennedy was assassinated. But the Kennedy assassination is in the news all the time, continuously, and from time to time I update information on the assassination because that's where my interest first began in doing research 18 years ago, and it began by studying asking the question, who killed John Kennedy? The courts this week blocked the appeal of Marina Oswald. She's been trying to get the body exhumed of her husband, Lee Harvey Oswald. She believes the grave is empty. Last week, there was a news account 2 weeks ago that the grave would be open. I called Marina, congratulate her, and she said, I don't think it's that easy. We'll wait and see. And sure enough, this week, the judge in Texas, in Fort Worth, Texas, has blocked exhuming the body of Lee Harvey Oswald. I personally think that I should have gotten a book out a long time ago, and I've worked on a book on the Oswald doubles, and this encourages me to just hasten the project and get on with it, starting probably within 2 weeks. The research is all done because it has to do with who would have been in that grave and why they had to remove it because it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald. This is a project that I chose for my first book because I thought the use of doubles and the subterfuge is the most heavily documented piece of work that I could possibly write on the Kennedy assassination before I get into other works, and it's very important. If that body is not there in the grave, if they get permission to exhume it and the body is not there, that will probably be the second biggest disappearance in the history of international affairs. I suppose the flight of capital, of money and banks being emptied out in Germany before World War II is over, the Nazis emptied out the entire bank accounts and deposited them elsewhere when the war was over, they'd have this capital to begin businesses in other countries. And the disappearance of Lee Harvey Oswald must be two of the largest disappearances from a historical standpoint, and I believe both of them were caused by the same people. I think that Robert Oswald, the brother of Lee Harvey Oswald, is holding up this exhuming the body because I think he knows a lot about the manipulations, the plans for Lee Harvey Oswald to leave town, the use of doubles, the possibility that that was not Lee Harvey Oswald in the grave. And I believe, based upon my research, that he was a partner in espionage when Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Soviet Union and his brother Robert was in the United States. If the body isn't there, it opens up the whole case again and brings into question the government agencies, of course, the FBI, the CIA, the Defense Department, and the Warren Commission. And this is a big story. It's hard to visualize how they could allow it to be opened up, and once more, they have stalled. I mentioned on previous programs the song A Quiet Thing and how news that breaks that should make headlines is always told in the wee hours of the morning or very quietly on the back pages of the newspapers. This week on the Tomorrow Show, Tom Snyder was off and Dick Cavett was host, and G. Robert Blakey, the chief counsel for the House Select Committee on Assassinations, was on, and it was very quiet. It was 12:30. In the morning, this was the 25th of September, I was almost going to bed. I don't usually watch the program, and I watched the opening lines, and there was the motorcade with John Kennedy coming down the street in the famous Abraham Zapruder film, and the opening scene for the promotion of the hour that was to follow were the sayings that the killers of John Kennedy are still on the street, the assassins are out walking the street. I perked up and watched and took notes of the program, and G. Robert Blakey was explaining as the chief counsel how he didn't believe there was a conspiracy to kill John Kennedy, and that the $6 million investigation of Congress into the murder of John Kennedy showed that there was a conspiracy. And he described four shots, and two came from the back of John Kennedy. He said from Oswald in the book depository, but he has never in his investigation proved that Lee Harvey Oswald fired those shots from behind. But the important thing was that in reconstructing the scene, he had the third shot over at the fence at the grassy knoll, which would be the fatal headshot killing John Kennedy. And, of course, he's trying to link it to organized crime. That's the way the government is going. If they have to have an assassination and they have the evidence of a conspiracy, they'll blame organized crime. So what we got was a cover-up at a level that I described in 1979, in January of 79, on the broadcast. It was several years ago, that if they couldn't say Lee Harvey Oswald did it, killed the president alone, and if they couldn't say Fidel Castro did it or that the Soviet Union did it, then they went for the organized crime and the syndicate, and then maybe a few renegade anti-Castro Cubans thrown in with the organized crime with the Bay of Pigs, what they call the fiasco. Well, Blakey didn't touch the anti-Castro Cubans, but he did get to the syndicate, and of course they would like to finger Carlos Marcello and Santo Trafficante and Sam Giacana and Jack Ruby and John Rosselli. Now, if they could arrange those 552 witnesses and 26 volumes of commission hearings and say that the organized crime figures were so strategically placed that they could also cover the investigation as well as the murder, that was a pretty cute trick. But the main point is that he was on national television, even though it was early in the morning, and many of you probably didn't even see it advertised or know it was on. But here is the chief counsel talking about the fatal headshot at the grassy knoll over in the plaza there, and that there was a conspiracy. Now, G. Robert Blakey pushes his book, the current book on the assassination that he wrote, as if all other books that came before it didn't matter, that they were done by kooks or loonies, and that he has a definitive study. And Dick Cavett sits there like an absolute idiot, laughing and grinning and even apologizing for laughing at such a serious program. At one point, he begins to apologize because he's having such a good time chuckling over it. But the bottom line, again, I repeat, maybe it'll take 17 or 18 more years, but I doubt it. The bottom line of this assassination, going up that triangle of conspiracy, is Division 5 of the FBI, the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, the Defense Industry Security Command, Defense Department, and then going on farther up, Interpol, the Nazi connections of J. Edgar Hoover and Martin Bormann down in Argentina. These people now, these names I threw out in 1979, the names are surfacing now more in the news, and that's why sometimes I like to go back and mention when on a particular program, such as 2 years ago, I was mentioning these people. And I mentioned the links in New Jersey. Now, that's coming out as the headquarters of the assassination teams of George Corcola, Amstec Corporation in Nutley, New Jersey, the ITT headquarters, the IG Farben headquarters, the Standard Oil of New Jersey, the Houston, Texas connections, the Dallas connections, the New Orleans connections to this international assassination team are in the news constantly, and eventually they will be pinned down also to the Kennedy assassination. And then going on up to Otto Winnicker in the Pentagon, the chief historian from Germany who helped write the War Department, which leaves you with the top Nazis. But at least there is this discussion of Blakey on television willing to say that there were shots at the grassy knoll, not giving credit to any of the past researchers, not using other researchers who had done extensive work on the assassination with this committee, pretending to start from scratch, trying to disprove all of us, and then being very smug and sitting there as if he found a great secret that there was a conspiracy, and also sitting on the time bomb of how much he's covering up, just as the Warren Commission did earlier. But every time they open their mouth or have an investigation, more comes out. So it was worth watching the program to hear him say that. I received a series of letters from a very loyal listener who has been asking me to update the shooting of Ronald Reagan last March and the John Hinckley story, and to bring up some information to you that I haven't put on this program to include with the other programs that we did on the Ronald Reagan shooting. I can assure you that when it comes time for the trial of John Hinckley Jr., it'll be similar to the trial, the Jonestown trial of Larry Layton. This last week it was a mistrial. If the prosecution does a weak prosecution for a agent of the United States government, whether it's CIA or Defense Department or both, when the prosecution is weak, then the jury can't come to conclusions about it and will let that person off. And the prosecution, and of course there was no defense, that was a really terrible trial in San Francisco considering the seriousness of what went on and the way the government held back information about what went on in Jonestown. How can the jury come to a decision that's fair, and how can the prosecution conduct a trial if 80% of the information is held by the federal government and the federal government is involved in the larger conspiracy? So the trial of Larry Layton brought out no information about Jonestown, and the judge wouldn't let it enter the case. And I can assure you that the FBI and the CIA will cover up the John Hinckley case. I was asked why I didn't mention earlier the picture in Newsweek and in Time magazine taken the day that Ronald Reagan was shot in front of the Hilton Hotel. The April 13th, 1981 issue of Newsweek and also of Time, if you look it up, there is a man at the balcony leaning down, kneeling on the balcony, almost identical to a man in Dealey Plaza behind John Kennedy's back of the Daltex building, photographed on the stairway. There is somebody behind Ronald Reagan, and this is in Time magazine, and it is in Newsweek. And then Penn Jones put it in his continuing inquiry. He points out that Agent McCarthy is standing to the right of Ronald Reagan, but if you look directly over Hinckley, up at the bullet path, you'll see a man kneeling behind the balcony railing with partially open drapes and an open door, and he's in firing position, pistol firing position. It is a very scary picture. It's a subject that has never been asked by the law enforcement agencies I know, as they came to an immediate conclusion that John Hinckley Jr. was infatuated with Jodie Foster. They pulled that against this week. The Washington Post has a long article, "Letter Affirms Hinckley's Desire for Jodie Foster. John Hinckley sends a letter affirming his interest in the actress." Now, September the 7th, just 2 weeks ago, an unsolicited letter came from John Hinckley Jr. This is the first time he surfaced. He's not at a regular jail in Washington, D.C. He's staying at the military base, which figures because I believe it was a military operation that tried to kill Ronald Reagan. Now, he sent a letter, "You and other journalists make it sound like I'm a hobo or something. My cross-country ventures were necessary because New Haven was so far away, I would have traveled to Budapest to find Jodie Foster, but I'm in Maryland and closer." So that the cover-up is going on again, that John Hinckley Jr. simply wanted to be close to Jodie Foster, and that's why he shot at the time to prove his love for Jodie Foster. He shot Ronald Reagan. There is another article, two of the three shots, three people shot with Ronald Reagan are still undergoing medical treatment. They're very seriously in trouble. Officer Thomas Delahanty still has a bullet lodged next to his spine, the right side of his brain. And Mr. O'Leary Brady, has the surgery. It was a surgeon, O'Leary, Dennis O'Leary, who spoke for Brady, the former press secretary, James Brady, who said that he shows no improvement, that he has hard days, he's at a frustrating stage, and that he has gone through extensive therapy, but it's very depressing now. When all the jelly beans stop coming and the puzzles stopped coming and the laughing president stopped to visit him, then the fun and games of recuperating or having a brain that's turned to jelly is the responsibility of Brady. Poor James Brady is suffering at the hospital still, and John Hinckley Jr. will probably get a little tap on the wrist, I'm sure. There's another article in the Los Angeles Times and the San Jose Mercury this week. Ohio labor leader who tackled John Hinckley Jr. Died. He was in Cleveland, Ohio, and he had surgery. He had what was supposed to be an ulcer, and on the surgery table, he didn't regain consciousness, and he passed away. This was a man from the Carpenters Local who was supposed to be inside at the labor union meeting, AFL-CIO. At the time, Ronald Reagan spoke at the hotel there. And he's the man who lunged at Hinckley and punched him and wrestled him to the ground. And this man, his name is McNamara, said he hit Hinckley so hard he was left with blood on his knuckles. And I'm wondering if, and I'll bring up the subject that I pointed out at the time Reagan was shot about the possible doubles. There were doubles of Hinckley standing there outside the Hilton. The news people saw two persons that looked alike, in addition to that man on the balcony they're not talking about. And I wonder if they grabbed John Hinckley Jr., who was supposed to get away, and this Mr. McNamara hurt him. He says he hurt him very badly. He went back to Ohio, and he's now dead. A possible witness at the trial or somebody who injured Hinckley is now dead. Now, I was asked the question why, this was in a letter, why don't you go into the shooting of Ronald Reagan? And I guess the answer is a two-part answer. Sometimes I wait until more information comes in to fill in with the shooting to bring it up to date instead of just throwing it out all at one time. And there is information that is terribly important, and I want you to take a pencil and write it down or send a self-addressed stamped envelope to me, and I'll send you a sheet from tonight's broadcast with the chronology of these dates, because this story isn't over yet. It's terribly important, and I want you to follow it carefully. The night before Ronald Reagan was shot, that was March 29th, on tape 486, the title of the broadcast that I had here was "The Top Dogs Are Fighting. Who Will Kill Their Team Members Off First?" And I gave reasons why Alexander Haig was mad and listed the conflict in the White House and State Department and National Security Council of Alexander Haig, involved with earlier Bay of Pigs team and working his way up through the Pentagon to position of power at this time. Now, active in the Bay of Pigs team, he worked with Theodore Shackley, Edwin Wilson, Frank Sturgis, Richard Nixon, the entire Bay of Pigs operation that I call the assassination teams that were behind John Kennedy, who are working their way up to the White House throne very strategically. The other person I mentioned was Walter Stessel, who worked in the U.S. Embassy in Soviet Union. At the time, Lee and Marina Oswald were in the CIA and Navy intelligence, and Stessel is important because of Lee and Marina's possible links to John Paisley, who was murdered, with direct connections to the Nugan Hand Bank in Australia I talk about, and with the assassination teams of the White House and Navy intelligence that know the role that Lee and Marina Oswald had when they came to the United States. Stessel is a part of that at the time that the Wilson-Turple-Corcola-Nugan Hand story is breaking wide open, and it would be necessary for Haig of Bay of Pigs and Stessel and these other parties to be in control of the White House, because Richard Nixon's godfather, that's Ronald Reagan, who took over from Nixon. Nixon was in charge of the Bay of Pigs. Reagan is in the White House. Politically, they're of the same mind, but Reagan wasn't there through the assassination teams and the Bay of Pigs the way that Richard Nixon had control as vice president under Eisenhower all those years, and working with the intelligence department straight through his presidency. Reagan is too new in Washington to handle this expose. Now, the Kevin McCullough story that was given to the CIA about Wilson and Turple and Theodore Shackley and various members of the intelligence community funding terrorist organizations such as Carlos and Gaddafi and Idi Amin and their assassination teams. The CIA has had this information since 1967, 1976, and kept it quiet until Stansfield Turner and Jimmy Carter were in there. And it's a hot potato. So for 4 years, they've been sitting on this, and the story is breaking now and going to the House Intelligence Committee so that Haig and Stetzel, with their role with John Paisley and Yuri Nosenko and the Bay of Pigs, were top members that would want to move up in a control of power in the White House. If Ronald Reagan were murdered, it would be essential maybe to get rid of Reagan to make sure they had control of these agencies. The third person I mentioned that was tangling in this theme was Richard Pipes. Now, Richard Pipes was a Soviet expert along with John Paisley, who worked with George Bush, director of the CIA, and it was George Bush, this CIA director, who left the agency not telling Stansfield Turner that they had that information since 76, the scandalous information about the CIA terrorism assassination teams. And Bush, as the CIA director, worked both with Pipes and Paisley. Paisley was murdered, and Pipes took over the Soviet division with Richard Allen. And then fourth name that I mentioned the night before Reagan was shot was Richard Allen, who has worked closely, I mentioned on that program, with the Young Americans for Freedom. And in 1962, he arrived from Germany and went to Texas. He assisted the YAF, who arrived from Germany and went to Texas to work on the Kennedy assassination. Now, Theodore Shackley was in Berlin until 1962. He went to Texas and went to the United States in Miami, worked with the anti-Castro Cubans, so that the team that I've been trying to untangle for you every week of Wilson, Turpel, Shackley, Corcoran, the CIA assassins, the terrorist group, are in power today, and finally William Casey of OSS CIA, who worked with Hitler's Reinhard Galen and set up our CIA. Casey started with organized crime and Lucky Luciana after the war, the OSS incorporating the organized crime into the intelligence community. These men, Haig, Stetzel, Pipes, Allen, and Casey, that I listed, were terribly important to entanglement that was going to come unfolded. And I wasn't sure which way it was coming, but it was obvious that they were fighting within the group. But the one thing they have in common is this past history of their role in the assassinations and the setting up of worldwide terrorism in the United States and at home. And Ronald Reagan is too new to that game, although he was 8 years governor, part of the CIA Defense Department, Operation Chaos, Operation Mind Control, as governor of California. He's been very much a part of it, the Garden Plot, the martial law plans, and he was on the Rockefeller Committee to investigate assassinations and foreign leaders and other CIA problems. He would quickly close that up and didn't go to many of those meetings. Ronald Reagan is still an outsider who came in at a time when these crises are developing. Now, on that same broadcast, I mentioned the problem with Alexander Haig, and there were several items that were important, and one was the arrest at Crystal River, Florida, of a commando leader with 12 military Reichstag persons training for nuclear terror and domestic overthrow. In the summary of the sheet that I have that goes out with that tape, dated March 29th, I said that the arrest at Crystal River, Florida, of a particular commando leader and 12 of his people was an important link to domestic counterintelligence and Reichstag behavior directly linked to the Pentagon and to Alexander Haig. What I didn't know, and I learned this week, was that the commando leader that I described, arrested at Crystal River on March 29th, has worked with the FBI and Defense Department for 10 years. He is, in fact, a counterintelligence operator who works with assassination teams with a Christian church front in Florida and runs a service of training assassins and mercenaries in Alabama that links directly to the Nazi organizations that John Hinckley Jr. was tapped into. Now, if this sounds complicated to you, it is. But in essence, on March 29th, the night before Reagan was shot, I was warning about the arrest at Crystal River, that these were the kinds of people that Alexander Haig and George Bush could use for assassination teams, and that they were people to watch carefully because of their links to future activity, and they certainly did surface in the future. Just this last week, the Christian Science Monitor, September the 20th, 1981, has an article, "Mercenaries Are Training in Alabama Woods." And this mentions a group of mercenaries. One is Franklin Joseph Camper, who was arrested at Crystal River, Florida. The other is a Mr. Lisenby, who I've briefly mentioned on these programs and haven't had a chance to go at great length, Robert Lisenby, who was arrested in Miami just recently with silencers in his car on his way to do domestic assassinations in the United States. He was in the Little Havana section with the Miami anti-Castro Cubans, but he's a blonde Aryan type, obviously not a Cuban, with weapons to kill, and he was arrested, and the NBC News carried one story, I believe it was NBC. A friend of mine taped it on videotape, and they have not yet proven who he was to assassinate. And I seriously believe that Franklin Joseph Camper, with his school in Alabama, and with Robert Lisenby from North Carolina and Miami, this gang could have been the same North Carolina Nazi group that were involved with John Hinckley Jr. and one of these men or one of their team. They have a team of several hundred assassins, was the man on the balcony that shot Ronald Reagan on March the 30th, the day after I mentioned the Crystal River gang. And I believe that when they check out that man on the balcony in that room, I'll bet you it'll go down to this assassination team from Alabama, Miami, North Carolina. Now, this group were arrested at Crystal River. They got off. As I say, the fellow who ran it has this mercenary school in Alabama. They also were involved, and this gets complicated, into the attempt to invade Dominica, or Dominica, as it's described, that little island in the Caribbean, a haven that was to be set up with Nazi flags, Ku Klux Klan information, heroin activity, literature of anti-Semitism to go all over the world. It included a combination of Nazis, Klan members, and money from Texas, Alabama, Louisiana, North Carolina, and Florida, heavily funded, and from Canada. It brings in the Grand Dragon and the Klan people from Canada and the Southwest. And at the time of the Dominica invasion that failed, the name of John Connally came up, which again surfaces in the Ronald Reagan assassination attempt, and Robert Vesco that surfaces again. He was supposed to have a haven there. His name came up once in regard to that. The Dominica invasion, the Crystal River arrest, the arrest of Robert Lisenby in Florida are all linked to mercenary training schools, practicing of killing people, and they even use a psychiatrist, a man by the name of Carl Ward, a clinical psychologist from Dallas, Texas, goes to this school, in quotes, to study how people act under stress. They have fun and adventure, practice killing, and so forth. And that Crystal River clue, I think, with the way they train assassins, might be the man who was on the balcony behind Ronald Reagan. Now, April the 12th, just a week or after the shooting attempt, 2 weeks after the shooting attempt on Ronald Reagan, I did a broadcast here with Ray Fabrizio, where I talked about Edward Richardson, another fellow that was arrested up in New Haven, Connecticut, the clone of John Hinckley Jr. Richardson belonged to a church group, and I have yet to update his background, that is directly linked to the Carl McIntyre Christian Church front that was behind the assassination of John Kennedy. And this Lisenby trains through a Christian church group down in Miami. And I wonder if Edward Richardson and the man on the balcony also knew each other. Also on that broadcast, this was April the 12th of this year, I brought out the information with Ray Fabrizio, who was my guest and who's done research in the Kennedy assassination. I brought out, and Ray brought out, the evidence that the shots that went into Ronald Reagan and attempted to kill the other three men came from behind and had the same script as a John Kennedy assassination. We talked about two guns, two different kinds of weapons, a .22 and a .38, and that discrepancy went right into the surgery room when Ronald Reagan was operated. I talked about the 6 or 7 or 8 bullets in 2.3 seconds. There were too many for one person. We talked about the ricocheting from the car door that changed the trajectory, and if the bullet came from the balcony, it would hit that car door and then go ricochet into Ronald Reagan. We talked about the witnesses who heard a person behind Ronald Reagan shooting, and that was ignored, that they looked behind. We talked about the clothing of the people that was not examined to see if there were shots from behind them. Or I didn't have the picture of the man on the balcony at the time. I had it, but wasn't aware of it. It came out, as I say, that week in Time and Newsweek. But looking at all the articles of cross-filing, many researchers missed the man crouched up on the balcony. And we were talking about comparisons to the John Kennedy assassination and left out, like the Daltex building when John Kennedy was shot, the man on the balcony there. We talked about how three men fell as if in battle and reacted differently than Ronald Reagan and how he walked into the car. And we talked about the discrepancy in the trajectory and the weapons. And then I brought up the membership of John Hinckley Jr. in the Nazi Party, his involvement with Nazis in various states, and also the similarity to Oswald and his association with Nazis in the United States. There were many references to the possibility of another person standing up on that balcony that evening, and these pictures seem to confirm it. I'm going to take a break for 1 minute now, and we'll get on to the Ronald Reagan shooting and then some very other important subjects.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.